Now that we are accustomed to the notion of equivalence classes, the construction of the integers and the rational numbers seems fairly natural. Equivalence classes provide a nice language for making certain objects identified. We can now use the integers and the rationals as we always have done, with the added confidence that they are not simply a useful notation, but that they have been constructed. We turn next to the real numbers. We saw earlier that the rational number system is not closed under operations of taking square roots, for example. They're also not closed under limits, which is even more important. We know from calculus that for many other purposes, the rational numbers are inadequate. It is important to work in a number system that is closed with respect to all the operations that we intend to perform. While the rationals are closed under the usual arithmetic operations, addition, subtraction, multiplication, and division, they are not closed under the operation of taking limits. For example, the sequence of rational numbers 3, 3.1, 3.14, 3.141, 3.1415, 3.14159 is getting closer and closer together by 1/10, then by 1/100, then by 1/1000, then by 1/10,000. And they seem to be tending to some limit, but there's no rational number which will serve as the limit. In fact, the limit turns out to be pi, which is irrational. So we will now deal with the real number system, a system that contains all limits of sequence of rational numbers as well as all limits of sequences of real numbers. In fact, our plan will be this. In this section, this lecture, we shall treat all the requisite properties of the reals. We shall prove some significant theorems about the real number system. The actual construction of the reals is a bit tricky, and we shall discuss that construction in an appendix at the end of the lecture. Or maybe tomorrow, depending on how our time goes. Let A be an ordered set. Let X be a subset of A. The set X is called bounded above if there is an element B in A, such that X is less than or equal to B for all X in X. We call the element B an upper bound for the set X. Example, let A be the rational numbers with the usual ordering. The set X equals the set of all little x in Q with X strictly between 2 and 4 is bounded above. For example, the number 15 is an upper bound for X, so is the number 12, and so is the number 4. It is interesting to observe that no element of X could be an upper bound for X. The number 4 is a good candidate, but 4 is not an element of X. In fact, if B is an X, then B plus 4 over 2 is an X, and B plus 4 over 2 is greater than B, so B could not be an upper bound for X. It turns out that the most convenient way to formulate the notion that the real numbers have no gaps, i.e. that all sequences that seem to be converging actually have something to converge to, is in terms of upper bounds. Definition. Let A be an ordered set, and X a subset of A. An element B in A is called a least upper bound, or supremum for X. If B is an upper bound for X and there is no upper bound B prime, B star for X with B star less than B. That's why B is the least upper bound. We denote the supremum least upper bound of X by sup X or lub X. Lub stands for least upper bound. By its very definition, if a least upper bound exists, then it is unique. Example. In the last example, we consider the set X of rational numbers strictly between 2 and 4. We observed that 4 is the least upper bound for X. Note that the least upper bound is not an element of the set X. The set Y, which is a set of elements of Z greater than or equal to minus 9, less than or equal to 7, has the least upper bound 7, and in this case, the least upper bound is an element of the set Y. Notice that we may define a lower bound for a subset of an ordered set in a fashion similar to that for an upper bound. L in A is a lower bound for X subset A if L is less than or equal to X for all little x and capital X. A greatest lower bound, or infimum for X, is then defined to be a lower bound L so that there is no lower bound L star that is greater than L. We denote the infimum greatest lower bound either by infx or glubx. Glub stands for greatest lower bound. The set X in the above examples has lower bounds minus 20, 0, 1, and 2. For instance, the greatest lower bound is 2, which is not an element of the set. That's for the set X. The set Y in the last example has lower bounds minus 53, minus 22, minus 10, and minus 9. To name just a few, the number minus 9 is the greatest lower bound, and it is an element of the set Y. Another example, let S be the integers contained in the reals, and S does not have either an upper bound or a lower bound. Obviously, the integers get bigger and bigger and bigger, and smaller and smaller and smaller, without any bound. The purpose that the real numbers will serve for us is as follows. They will always contain the rationals, they will still be an ordered field, and every non-empty subset which has an upper bound will have a least upper bound. We formulate this property as a theorem. There exists an ordered field, boldface capital R, that 1 contains the rationals, 2 has the property that any non-empty subset of R which has an upper bound has a least upper bound. We shall not prove this theorem right now. The proof is in the appendix where we construct the reals. So suspend your disbelief for a while we learn to think about the reals. The last property described in this theorem is called the least upper bound property of the real numbers. As mentioned previously, this theorem will be proved in the optional appendix. Now we begin to realize why it is so important to construct the number system that we will use. We are endowing R, the reals, with a great many properties. Why do we have any right to suppose that there exists a number system with all these properties? We must produce one. Let us begin to explore the riches of the real number system. The next theorem states a property that is certainly not shared by the rationals. It is fundamental in its importance. Let x be a positive real number, then there is a positive real number y, so that y squared equals x. So every positive real number has a square root. You know that this is not true in the rationals. For example, 2 does not have a rational square root. 5 does not have a rational square root. No prime number has a rational square root. The proof of this theorem is serious business. It's a tricky calculation. You will want to verify the details for yourself, but let's anyway go through it. So we will use throughout this proof the fact that if 0 is less than a less than b, then a squared is less than b squared. Let capital X be the set of all little x in the real so that s is positive and s squared is less than x. Then s is not empty since x over 2 is an s if x is less than 2 and 1 is an s if x is bigger than or equal to 2. Also, S is bounded above, since X plus 1 is an upper bound for S. By the theorem above, the set S has the least upper bound. Call it Y. We claim that this Y is the square root of X that we seek. Obviously, 0 is less than the minimum of X over 2, comma 1, less than or equal to Y. Hence, Y is positive. We claim that Y squared equal X. To see this, we eliminate the other two possibilities. If y squared is less than x, then set epsilon equal to x minus y squared divided by 4 times the quantity x plus 1. Then epsilon is bigger than 0 because x is bigger than y squared. And y plus epsilon squared is y squared plus 2 times y times epsilon plus epsilon squared, which is y squared plus 2 times y times the expression that we use to define epsilon plus the expression that we use to find epsilon multiplied by itself. So I'm just substituting in the value of epsilon here in two places. And it's easy to see that this is less than y squared plus 2 times y over x plus 1 times x minus y squared over 4. That's just breaking up the fraction into two pieces. Plus x minus y squared over 4 times x over 4x. Those are simple estimates. And this is less than y squared plus x minus y squared over 2 plus x minus y squared over 16, which is less than y squared plus x minus y squared, which equals x. So y plus epsilon is an s, and therefore y cannot be an upper bound for s. This contradiction tells us that it's not true that y squared is less than x. A similar calculation shows that if it were the case that y squared is greater than x, then we set epsilon equal y squared minus x over 4 times x plus 1, and a calculation like the one we just did would show that y minus epsilon squared is bigger than x, hence y minus epsilon is also an upper bound for s, and y is therefore not the least upper bound. This contradiction shows that y squared cannot be greater than x. So we've eliminated the possibility that y squared is less than x, and we've eliminated the possibility that y squared is greater than x, so the only remaining possibility is that y squared equals x. So we've constructed a square root for any positive real number x. A similar proof shows that if n is a positive integer and x is a positive real number, then there is a positive real number y, so that y to the nth power equals x. So every positive real number has an nth root. Very nice. We next use the least upper bound property of the reals to establish two important qualitative properties of the reals. First theorem: the set R of real numbers satisfies the Archimedean property. Let A and B be positive real numbers, then there is a natural number n, so that n times A is greater than B. Proof. Suppose the Archimedean property were false. Then S, which is the sum of all n times A for n in the natural numbers, has B as an upper bound. Therefore, S has a finite supremum, beta. Since A is bigger than 0, beta minus A is less than beta. So beta minus A is not an upper bound for S, and there must be a natural number n, so that, or n star, so that n star times A is bigger than beta minus A. But then, putting the A on the right side over on the left, n star plus 1 times A is greater than beta, and beta cannot be the supremum for S. This contradiction proves the theorem. That's the end of today's lecture. See you next time.